You're listening to the Bird Dog Babe podcast with my mom, Courtney Bastian.
This episode is presented to you by Purina Pro Plan and Boss Shot Shells.
I think a lot of people, so they get a hunting dog, right? And they're high energy dogs. And so many people, it's becoming very popular right now, they send their dog to doggy daycare for hours at a time, sometimes all day. And they never personally interact with their dog. And I think that people, and not everybody, but a lot of people, they are not establishing that bond with their dog. And they're not teaching their dogs that, hey, you expend your energy by learning new things versus just running around a pen for 4 hours with, you know, 10 other dogs. And I think there's so much with hunting dog that can be fixed or, you know, worked on by just having a good bond with your dog and having them understand that, hey, we learn things together.
My guest today is Aaliyah Marco of Backwater Hunting Dogs in Southeast Nebraska. Aaliyah trains and personally hunts and guides with pointing breeds, flushing breeds, and even a Chiweenie. She believes each dog is different and trains as such. Aaliyah focuses on bonding with each individual dog to get the best out of them. She shares some hunt test strategy, tips for avoiding trainer burnout, and why she prefers to complete Master Hunter titles on dogs before they're 2 years old. Oh, and she loves GWPs, Cockers, and Broncos, so you just know she's got to be a pretty cool gal. All right, let's get after it. This episode is presented to you by Purina Pro Plan. What makes a great bird dog is genetics, training, and nutrition, and that's why I feed and trust Purina Pro Plan. With over 500 nutritionists, veterinarians, and scientists on staff, Pro Plan delivers a full spectrum of performance and specialized formulas to help bird dogs like yours excel at every stage of life. Pro Plan supports us, the breeders, owners, and trainers, the events we compete in, our national breed clubs, canine health research, and our committed partners to conservation groups such as Pheasants Forever, Rough Grouse Society, and Ducks Unlimited. 95 out of the top 100 dogs are fueled by the advanced nutrition of Purina Pro Plan. This episode is also presented by Boss Shot Shells. Copper-plated bismuth, Boss provides a better, more effective non-lead option than steel and are safe to use in Grandpa's gun. Available in 10, 12, 16, 20, 28 gauge, and 410 bore. Direct-to-consumer pricing and cases shipped directly to your door. Shoot Boss. Pattern your shotgun to make more clean and ethical shots, reduce crippling, and remove lead from the uplands, wetlands, and all lands. Find out more at BossShotShells.com. A big shout out to the people and partners that are helping me keep the MP3s rolling for this podcast. My Patreon patrons, the bread and butter, the peeps, the community of like-minded individuals that are eager to learn and offer to contribute. Join us for $5 per month on patreon.com/TheBirdDogBabe for exclusive discounts, content, and live Q&A sessions. 5% of your contribution goes to the AKC Canine Health Foundation and another 5 goes to conservation. Dakota 283, unparalleled protection for your dog's travel to and from your next adventure. My favorite is the G3 kennel, which has a recessed handle on top that makes it easy for me to lift in and out of my truck. The keyed pedal latching door makes me feel at ease on trips when I have to leave dogs in my truck when I stop for fuel. An added bonus is the drain hole in the back, which makes cleaning a breeze when my dog has been run hard and put away wet. Go to Dakota283.com and use promo code BIRDDOGBABE for 10% off. And by Siren, shotguns for women. Siren carries the only full line of women's shotguns. They are dedicated to providing the equipment and knowledge that makes shooting and hunting more enjoyable and less stressful. New or seasoned hunter, Siren offers multiple options that fit right out of the box. No more compromises. Go to SirenUSA.com and check out all the options available for upland, waterfowl, sporting, and trap shotguns. Hey, Aaliyah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I'm really excited to have you on. I'm kind of a new follower to you on Instagram. We have some mutual friends that have been said, you really need to get that Aaliyah on there. She's an awesome chick. And, are you new to the kind of bird dog industry, or how long have you been doing the whole bird dog thing?
Well, there's probably no straight answer to that question, but I'll do my best.
Okay.
So, kind of, sort of. I've been hunt testing for about 7 years, and I started out just hunt testing my own personal dogs, and then I started taking client dogs about 3 years ago. So I guess as far as just the whole bird dog world, I pretty much started bird hunting shortly before I got my first bird dog of my own. So maybe 10 years is the length of time I've been actually bird hunting.
How did you get started in bird hunting?
Well, okay. So, I'm originally from Sitka, Alaska. And so there's nothing to do there other than hunt or fish. And so my dad drug me out all over the place. He did a lot of trapping and fishing, some hunting and stuff. So I was always around it. And I grew up just, you know, being a girl of the outdoors. And, it wasn't until, I hate to say it, started dating a guy when I was 18, 19 years old. And he was pretty hardcore into the hunting. And that's kind of what sparked me into specifically the bird dogs. Mm-hmm. So prior to that, as a child, I grew up obsessed with dogs. All through high school, I helped a local trainer that just did obedience. I helped her teach her obedience classes. And then I actually taught puppy obedience training classes, in like my early 20s and stuff like that. So it wasn't until I kind of saw bird dogs in action that I was just like, holy cow, this is now my passion.
Has it always been upland bird hunting, or do you do big game as well?
So, yes, both. My husband and I both enjoy just pretty much any type of hunting. I started out doing more waterfowl hunting, and even to this day, waterfowl hunting that's got my heart. That's what I enjoy doing the most. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of upland hunting, like guiding hunts and stuff like that. And to be completely honest, that's kind of just a hobby / what I do for some extra money. But when I have a chance and we've got a free day and the weather allows, we are out waterfowl hunting.
So what was the first bird dog breed that you saw work that really kind of got you connected and into it?
Labs and Chessies.
Okay.
On the Platte River. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just busting ice, going after geese. And oh man, I just thought that was so cool.
So what was your first breed that you got then?
Well, so of course I wanted to be different because I'm just a weirdo like that. And somehow I ended up with a Vizsla. I get asked okay. that question all the time. Why a Vizsla? I couldn't tell you. It just happened. Mm-hmm. And, I had kind of dwindled it down to, I wanted a versatile breed. So, a dog that could do upland stuff as well as waterfowl. And to be completely honest, I was completely naive. I had no idea that it was just complete blasphemy to do waterfowl stuff with a Vizsla.
Right.
It's a lot more popular now, so that might sound a little weird hearing that from me. But when I started with my Vizsla, he's 7 now. It was just like, what are you doing? You're in the wrong venue here. So,
right.
And cause I started her on like ducks and waterfowl.
Mm-hmm. Was it hard to get her to come around, or was she one that was a natural water loving Vizsla?
Bless her little heart. She was a natural, but if I'm being honest, I didn't know any better. I mean,
okay.
I just treated her like a lab, any other waterfowl dog. And, I guess I had expectations in my mind, and I just didn't baby her or, you know, be like, oh, I don't know if she'll like the water. I just made her do it. and she's very compliant. So she loved it. So,
yeah. Because when you think of somebody that just primarily wants a waterfall dog, typically a Vizsla isn't the very first option at the top of the list.
I would agree with you.
And I think, I mean, is that how you kind of got your name and you're known in the community as like the Vizsla lady? Is because of all the things that you did?
Yeah, I would show up to AKC Retriever Hunt Test with my Vizsla. And I mean, it just became a term. You're the Vizsla lady. Oh, look, the Vizsla lady's here. Or I would meet random people and they'd be like, you're the Vizsla lady, aren't you? I saw you at that hunt test. And again, I truly didn't know any better. I wasn't trying to prove a point until, so I got through like junior hunter with her, and somebody basically told me I had no business to go any further than that, and that you couldn't teach a Vizsla to run a blind, and God forbid they couldn't run a double. And that's why I took her to the next step and did, I did a few senior hunter tests with her just because somebody told me I couldn't.
Oh yeah. I'm the same way you
but
are.
I will and I... say, if somebody were to come out and ask me flat out, I will be, again, completely honest. I'm not going to say, oh, you want a waterfowl hunt? You know, you live in the Midwest. You want your dog to break ice. I'm not going to recommend get a Vizsla. But if somebody were to say, hey, I've got this Vizsla, can I do waterfowl with it? Absolutely. So I'm still very realistic. A lot of people, I think, kind of get stuck on their one breed and they're like, this is the best for everything. And they don't open their minds to, you know, let's be realistic here. A Chesapeake, a Labrador, they're going to be able to withstand the cold temperatures and being in the water, when it's January and minus 10 degrees out.
Mm-hmm. I mean, did anybody tell you when you showed up at the hunt test, like, you're at the wrong hunt test. You should be in the pointing breed hunt test, not the retriever one.
I joined a retriever club, local club. And the very first practice, little get together thing that we had, I was told some pretty nasty things by some pretty well-known retriever guys. Mm-hmm. And, they basically brushed me off and put me at the end and basically said, you can run your dog when we're all done. Mm-hmm. I've had some people be pretty nasty to me.
Yeah.
But I've also had people that have just been so supportive and so kind. And those are the people that, you know, are going to continue the future of this sport. Those negative Nancys, they just need to stay home. The supportive, kind people, they're all the people. And it took many years for me to see that those people are actually the ones that are coming out ahead in the long run just because they're good people.
Yeah, right. And I can relate. I have a similar experience. We had a retriever club a half a mile down the road from us, a really large one. And we sent in our membership. We did the volunteered to help with the retriever test because it was a lot of fantastic ponds and it was really nice to be able to utilize those for the NABDA invitational training for blinds and such. And it was about 2 months in, and after we were training there, they came to our front door and said, I'm sorry, we are going to revoke your membership. People don't like that the pointing dogs are there.
It was a
low blow. Yeah.
I basically have been told, and I have no shame in saying it, but the Nebraska Dog and Hunt Club, it's a primarily retriever-based club, and they flat out have told me, you have pointing breeds. You are not allowed to train on our grounds. They won't take my money. They won't let me train there. It's really sad because not only it's literally right up the road where they train. Not only would I utilize that, but I have so many clients that would gladly pay a membership to be able to go and train their dog there. And, you know, we wouldn't be in anybody's, we're there to do the same thing that anybody else is. You know,
right.
Plop a duck in the water and go and pick it up. We're not hurting anything, but that's beside the point.
Yeah.
That frustrates me.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Well, good for you for sticking it out and continuing on. So you put a senior hunter retriever title on your Vizsla then.
So I did not get the senior hunter title. I stopped. Okay. I got two or three passes. And okay. I know that sounds ridiculous, not finished. But at that point, I had basically, I was burnt out because of the way I was being treated by all the retriever people. And I just was like, you know what, I'm going to go try the pointing stuff and just see if we can do it. So she had already had two or three senior retriever passes before we ever even ran our first junior hunter in pointing.
Hmm. Wow.
But and she was the first Vizsla to ever get a senior pass with AKC retrieving.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. That's frustrating to, you know, to start it and not be able to finish because of, you know, the going on that happened there. And to be fair, they're not all like that because we've also been.
They are not.
Yeah. With some that are fantastic, just like you said earlier. So, but yeah.
I think it's just kind of human mentality to let the negative outweigh the positive sometimes. And,
sure.
You know, at that point it was just like, gosh, you know, I'm not here to prove anything. At that time, I'm like, you know, I wanted to go do the pointing stuff because again, I didn't know anything about the pointing world. So I was super intrigued by it. And I'm like, wow, like this is really kind of feeling my fire right now. So I'm going to go pursue this, check this part out.
Mm-hmm. And you've been doing hunt tests ever since then.
Ever since. Yep. And I've done NARA, which is the North American Hunting Retriever Association. I've done HRC, NAFTA. I've ran AKC retrieving, pointing, and I've dabbled in field trials as well.
Okay. Horseback field trials?
Yes.
Awesome. So what's your favorite of all those?
I knew you were going to ask me that. I love NAFTA just because it's just kind of my jam. It's everything in one. And I love that. I love showing that a dog can truly just do everything. And I think that there's really good people in NAFTA. There's great people in every venue. Don't get me wrong. Honestly, the best people are probably in NARA, which is the North American Hunting Retriever Association. I have to say that because everyone's like, what's that? I think the best people are in NARA. But as far as what interests me the most right now in this moment, it's the horseback field trials.
Really?
And I dabbled in it and then I just didn't truly have the time to commit to doing it anymore. I mean, it's a huge commitment to do that.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And I just needed to get a couple more dogs that were kind of ready and able to compete at that level. So mm-hmm. yeah, that's, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's dogs and horses and it's everything. I love it.
Right. Do you have horses as well then?
I do. I'm a crazy horse girl. I have two quarter horses. I'm just getting back into barrels. I used to be huge into it. Several years ago, we'd haul everywhere. I roped and ran barrels and got out of it for a little bit to focus on the dogs and start my business and everything. And now I'm finally at the point where I'm able to kind of revisit that passion again. And so I actually just started hauling around to some barrel races locally. And
that's awesome.
A little bit.
Yeah. So do you ride your quarter horses in the horseback field trials then?
So I've thought about it, but I don't want the scrutiny of.
Oh, come on. I feel like you're tough enough just to be like, yeah, I'm on a quarter horse and like watch me barrel around this tree like it ain't no thing.
Watch me spin around this. I would absolutely do it. But anytime I've ever gone to a field trial or ran in a field trial, I have graciously been lent a horse to use. And, you know, when you're first starting out with field trialing, that's one thing. If you can have any type of, you know, upper hand where you've got an old horse that's 20 years old that's done the thing, they kind of can carry you through the course and almost help you out. Whereas if I were to put myself on a quarter horse that's never been to a field trial, I would just be setting myself up for disaster. Not to say I wouldn't try it once.
I'm like, I'm imagining you like just spurring in and going up as a scout or getting up to that bird to your, up to your dog just so quickly. I think it'd be really cool. I think you should do
it. I would absolutely do that. I would.
What breeds have you all run in the field trials?
So I ran my Vizsla. So I have two Vizslas, but I ran my Vizsla named Juno. I ran her in puppy derby and just some open gun dog stuff.
So is she different than the one that you first started with?
Yes. So she was my second one. Okay. And, she was bred a little bit more to be a bigger runner than my first one. Mm-hmm. And the breeder that I had gotten her from was very encouraging and told me, hey, you know, try this out. Come to a field trial with me. Let's go see what she's got. And it was a total blast.
Was she your second dog then? So after your first Vizsla, you got a second Vizsla?
Correct. Yep, I got a second Vizsla.
Okay. So obviously the
Vizsla... And then it's all downhill from there.
Well, obviously you weren't deterred. You have, you know, being the waterfall hunter that you are to get another one. Was your second one just as water loving as your first?
She was. I mean, she's a great little waterfowl dog. She's a little bit smaller, so she struggles to like carry a full size goose, but she can do all of it too.
Okay. So what else is on your personal string of bird dogs right now?
Okay, well, I'm just going to start off by saying, I promise I'm not crazy, okay?
I feel like that's awesome.
I have 8 dogs total. Okay, in no particular order, I've got 2 Vizslas, a short hair, a wire hair, 2 field cockers, a yellow lab, and a Chiweenie.
Okay, you had me until the end there.
Yes.
Where did the Chiweenie come into the picture?
Okay, well, he wasn't. Everybody's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you'd buy a little designer breed. No, he was a total oopsie accident. My friend was like, oh my gosh, my sister's Chihuahua came over and spent the night and this happened and what am I going to do? And I'm like, I'll take one. Just for fun, I need a little lap dog travel buddy, and now I have Gimli is his name. And he's been everywhere. He's flown to Alaska with me. He's been to Vegas. He's been all over the country. He's just gone everywhere with me, including hunting.
I love it. I love your string.
Yeah, it's a pretty good string.
Yeah.
Pointers and flushers. That's my favorite thing to do is run the pointers with the flushers.
So what does your typical hunt look like? And let's talk upland right now. So when you're going out by yourself, what is your typical when the tailgate goes down, what are you pulling out?
Typically, depending on cover, but I would say 90% of the time, I would probably pull out 2 pointers and a cocker.
Okay. And then what are you doing? Are you sending in, do you like to have the cocker at a heel while you're hunting, or is the cocker out working with the other ones?
Personally, I like the cocker to get out and hunt. Both of them are females, so I'll just say she for the time being. She will basically stay within about 20 yards, pretty close working dog. A lot of times she'll find birds that have either like double back on the pointers and kind of get caught between me and the dogs in the front. A lot of times they'll pick up those birds that are trying to get back behind us, or they'll find their own birds. But I mean, if they see a dog on point, it's like game on. You better be ready because they are going in to flush it.
Okay. Nice. I have a cocker coming at the end of the month, and so I'm really trying to work out in my head right now how I want to do this, because some people keep them at a heel and then just send in for a flush, and the other ones have them working out like you do. And to be honest, I want to have them out there working as well. So
will soon realize those dogs, those little cockers, are like little, I don't know what you want, a little wind-up doll. Like, they don't stop. Mm-hmm. They are just go, 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 buzzing around the entire time. So mm-hmm. I think you would go crazy trying to keep them at heel. I mean, you can definitely train them to do anything. They'll heel just fine. If I see a dog way up ahead on point, a lot of times I'll call the cocker back to heel to walk up closer to the dog on point, just so they don't see it and take off without me and, you know, get there way too early. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's just a blast. They're the happiest, funnest dogs to hunt behind. You will not have a bad day walking behind a cocker. It's impossible. Nice.
No, I'm pretty stoked about it. So what does your dynamic look like when the two pointers are on point or one of them is? Are you allowing them all go for the retrieve, or are the pointers just holding steady?
So all the dogs that I have are basically, all the pointers are master level broke. So if I wanted to, I could have them stand there and, you know, pick which dog I wanted to send on the retrieve or let the cocker get it. Mm-hmm. But when I'm hunting, I don't even make those pointers stand totally broke. If they stand through the shot, I'm happy with that. And basically at that point, I am not the best shot. So I may have just shot a leg off or winged them. And I want every dog in that area as soon as possible to make sure that I recover that bird. Right. So I don't care who gets to it first. Mm-hmm. Whoever gets to it first, cool, bring it back.
Are you ever like secretly cheering on the cocker to be the one that gets to it first?
Every time. And
it's so
funny because she will beat the pointers to the bird many, many times. And
that's
they
awesome.
Just kind of look at each other like, crap, she did it again. They're not allowed to steal the bird. So once somebody has it in their mouth, you cannot steal it from them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they parade back with them, you know, thinking like, oh yeah, we're a part of this too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I like, you know, I mean, the difference in wild birds and hunt test birds is huge. And I think we do ourselves a disadvantage sometimes,
as,
you know, when we're out hunting and we want our dog to work the same on wild birds like they would, you know, in a hunt test. Because yeah, if you keep them there and hold them steady, you have roosters that are running like crazy. And
it's just not realistic, and you will end up losing birds that way.
You're right.
I don't care how good of a nose your dog has, you know, yeah, you've trained your dog to track. I get it. But I personally would not want to risk ever losing a bird that I shot down over just trying to be fancy and keeping my dog steady.
Mm-hmm. So in your spring season, are you cleaning up a lot of that, or do you feel like your dogs are pretty tuned into knowing when hunt test season starts to get, or like, you know, you bring them to a hunt test and that they need to hold steadiness because they know those situations?
So, and this is kind of something that I set myself up for success, or I try my best to set myself up for the best opportunities at hunt testing. And so typically my dogs, I try to get those master passes done before these dogs are turning two. And that way they've got their titles at a younger age and I don't have to worry about that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So like my wire hair right now, she's got 5 master passes. She needs one more. I am probably not going to hunt her until I get that last pass, just because hunting them, obviously, again, I'm not keeping them broke. And yes, dogs can figure out the difference. And yes, I can take my older dogs that have hunted wild birds a ton, and I can go take them to a field and put out Penrace quail, and they chance. They do know the difference, but it takes, you know, one or two birds where I'm correcting them, really telling them, whoa, reminding them, hey, you just got to stay broke for this. And typically they will kind of figure that out. Like, okay, there's two different scenarios here. But I try to just avoid it if I can and get the titles done at a young age. So I don't even have to worry about it.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about your training techniques. If you're kind of going through those advanced levels at that 2-year-old age, what are some of the techniques you're using for that?
So I am a firm believer in every dog is different, and I don't have the same, you know, 1-2-3-step methods that I use on every dog, especially starting with Vizslas that tend to be softer, more sensitive dogs.
Right.
They taught me a lot. And I just, every dog is different. Some dogs need more help with the retrieving. Some dogs need more help with steadiness. It's just every dog is so gosh darn different. And I try not to limit myself and say, okay, this dog needs this thing done or that thing done. And I try to learn and I watch other trainers and other people that are successful. And I try to just take little tidbits from everybody and apply it to what seems to work best for my personal, you know, dog or myself, what kind of makes sense in my head, you know? So I wouldn't say I have any set, you know, I do this method or that method. It's just kind of whatever works best for that dog.
Okay. Yeah. And I noticed a photo you had posted somewhat recently, and it was of a wire hair. And you said on there that she, with many trainers, she wouldn't have made the cut, or they wouldn't have taken the time to get her. What did that mean? Mm-hmm. Go into that a little bit.
So you're talking about Bella. She is, I got her at 6 months of age. She's a draught. And she had so much bird drive that she basically wanted to just go in and rip the birds out and jump 6 feet in the air and try to catch them out of the air. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people would have just been like, yeah, this dog won't point. Can't get this dog to point. And so for that dog, I taught her patience, and I did it through place training, having her wait for her food bowl, having her do like down and stays, and just taught her that being patient is basically you get rewarded for that. Mm-hmm. And then I taught her what the word whoa meant, not by using any pressure at all. I just basically taught her that whoa meant you don't move your feet anymore. And after launching about 200 pigeons in front of her and starting to incorporate that whoa word, she finally realized that, hey, if I use my brain for a second and I slow it down and I'm patient, that bird is going to get in the air and I'm going to get to actually retrieve it now, because she would never get to retrieve a bird until it was pointed.
Sure.
So, I mean, it took 60 days of every day reminding her to be patient and kind of slowing her roll a little bit. And finally she got to see the end result, which was a reward of her getting to retrieve the bird when she was patient and pointed it.
Mm-hmm. And she was a client dog of yours?
She was, yeah.
Okay. Okay. So how long have you been training full time? Are you full time? Is that what you're doing now?
So I take in 6 dogs per month.
Okay.
And I do it on a little bit of a smaller scale just to keep it. So I'm still enjoying it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot of trainers, they take on so much and they get really burnt out, or they just try to rush through a bunch of dogs, and just physically, I can't wrap my mind around some of these trainers that have 20 to 30 dogs every month. More power to them if they can get to it. I just personally would not have the mental capacity to deal with that many dogs and to be able to work that many dogs in a day. Mm-hmm. So I started I guess you could say training professionally, a little over 3 years ago is when I took in my first client dog. And, it's kind of been just, it's been wonderful. I've got dogs booked out several months in advance. I mean, even now I'm already booking into October at this point, into June. So I think, you know, a lot of that is because I take less dogs per month, but, I don't know, man. I'd love to have that one-on-one relationship with each dog and be able to spend a good amount of time with each dog. Yeah. To me, that's just super rewarding.
Right. We're the same way here too. It's 6 to 8, depending on, you know, the level. If there's the majority are, you know, like natural ability dogs, but really yep. only 2 or 3 utility dogs at a time. And you look at the time of the day, I mean, there are some sessions can be done in 10 minutes, but most of the time you figure a half an hour at least, minimum. Yep. And that's not counting, you know, catching the birds, putting them in the fields, getting exactly. everything set up in between. So you're right. I don't know how people do it either.
Well, and some dogs just, they need multiple touches every day. So, mm-hmm. you know, we've all had those dogs where it's like, you can really only get so much accomplished in about 10 minutes and that dog's just done. They can't really handle any more than that. Yeah. And so those are the dogs that I'm getting out 3-4 times a day, just really short little sessions. And it's just, mm-hmm. and again, when you're training duck search, I mean, I've got to, like you said, catch the ducks. I've got to drive an hour to the pond. Yeah. I've got a good 2.5 hours into training or into spent to train before I even send a dog on a retrieve.
Right. So, and that's not even counting the conditioning of the dogs, you know, that aspect
Correct.
Of it too. So, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, kudos to you. I like how you're doing things. What breeds are you, training the most? Like, I feel like when people start off in training, they start getting a reputation for specific breeds.
Yes.
Like, are you, being that you kind of started out as the Vizsla lady, do you feel like you're training, or you get, you know, more inquiries that people want to send in their Vizslas to you, or is it kind of all over yep. the place?
So it's a little all over the place, but I do see some tendencies. So when I was, running my Vizslas, they're both a little older now. So when I was running them, it was like, I got in a lot of Vizslas. Now I've got a wire hair and a short hair, but since I got the wire hair, I've just been seeing a big, increase in the bearded dogs. And then I got a couple draughts in for training, and that I'm seeing probably more than anything. And, you know, the draught community it's very small. Mm-hmm. And so if you get a good reputation, you'll get a lot of clients because either these people are sending, what I've found anyways, it seems like they're either sending the dog back to the breeder or they're trying to find somebody that knows drops. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that I know drops at all, but I've trained a few of them. And so people feel comfortable sending their dog to somebody like me that's handled a few because they are just a little bit unique.
Yeah. Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah. It's a lot. It's high drive. It's high drive, and I feel like they are extremely intelligent. Wire hairs and draughts in general. I feel like you're dealing with one of the most intelligent, versatile breeds out there when you're getting into.
I would 100% agree with that. And the biggest thing, and people ask me all the time, what's the difference between a short hair and a wire hair, you know, other than their coat? Mm-hmm. I feel like wire hairs, they are so in tune to their person.
Yeah.
And so when I get a wire hair in for training, it's a week before that dog trusts me and figures out, okay, I think I like this lady. As opposed to a short hair, they're like, cool, who wants to take me out? Let's go find birds. I don't care who you are. Let's go do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we tell people too, you know, when they call or email to inquire, it's like, You need to be smarter than the dog. That's the best training advice we can give you.
Oh, and, yeah.
And because or else they just, they take you over and then it all goes downhill from there. Like you can't.
They try to stay one step ahead of you.
They push for it too. And I think they get a bad rap, but they shouldn't. You really do need to be smarter than the dog.
Yep.
So, but I mean, you're kind of all over the board there with, dog personality types as well. And I even saw you had a Bronco in for training, or do you have it in now?
I don't have her now. But okay. I had her when she was younger last year, maybe. Mm-hmm. And then I had her again, and this time I was just conditioning her. Her owner took her to, your national, okay. I don't know the proper way to say it.
Yeah, our national specialty. Yep.
Yes. Yeah. So mm-hmm. I basically had her for 2 weeks and I was just conditioning her, getting her ran, exercised, and all that. And I did do a little bit more work with her on birds too.
Nice. Cool. I'll have to ask you later who that was, because I was at the national.
Yeah. oh, nice. But, yeah, I'm sure you are.
Yeah. Yes, I have Broncos and wire hairs, so I feel like the two best breeds, but it's just me.
We're all biased.
Right. And I think the wire hair you have is related to one of ours, because is your personal one out of Kai?
Yes.
Yeah, so I had Kai's sire, Camus.
So, oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah,
it's the world.
It is. Tis the dog world.
That's cool. It is. Yeah.
Yeah. So out of those, are you leaning towards a breed favorite of your own, or do you just prefer that, kind of variety?
I mean, I love the variety, but if I had to be forced into making a decision, I would say two things. So the Cockers, I just love them. Mm-hmm. I think they're wonderful. I think for the average person, you could get just about everything you could possibly want out of one of those little dogs.
Really?
I'm not saying, yes, they can be little waterfowl dogs too. But I'm talking up in regards to upland right now.
Okay.
They're great house dogs, extremely trainable and just not a mean bone on their body. They just want to please and they love learning. So Cockers are just, I'm very, very fond of that breed in particular right now.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to pick a breed just for myself personally, wire hair. I mean,
really,
they are,
that's awesome.
They're versatile just like everything else. And
yeah,
they can withstand the cold, harsh winters. And since we waterfowl hunt, I mean,
yeah.
There were days where she would have steam rolling off of her and our lab would be shivering. And I mean, they're just a different animal when it comes to just overall toughness. I mean,
you're right.
For us, we do everything, you know. There may be days that we're going and checking traps and we need a dog with us just in case something goes wrong. And, you know, they're just overall, I think they offer a lot for me
yeah.
personally that I enjoy.
Yeah, I agree. They're hardcore. I mean, we were just out for a hike and,
yeah,
you know, Camus just started ripping the bark off a tree and we're like, what is he going after? And we had nothing really else to do. We're out there snowshoeing. So we just let him at it. And sure enough, he just pulls a raccoon right out of the trunk of a tree. So
yep,
that was fun.
You gotta be, but that's the thing, is that's not for everyone. And so
yeah,
when people ask me, you know, what breed should I get or whatever, I try to dig down deep with what do you like to hunt? When do you like to hunt? What's your home life like? Because they aren't for yeah. everyone.
You're right. You're exactly right. Yeah. They're a lot for sure. But I would never not have one. You know, I love the Bronco, but you know, I feel like, here in Montana, if I'm out hunting and I get caught up with a bear somewhere, like the Bronco would turn backwards probably. And the wire hairs would be like, I got you, Mom. Don't worry. We're all good here.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you.
There's a level of
very safe.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, even now when people come into the house, I think my wire hairs would be like, oh, hey, welcome. Go ahead and take anything you want.
The cat is on the nightstand. Jewelry box is over there.
Right, right. Yeah. All right. Sorry, I'm getting off track here. I love that you love the wire hairs, though. I think really good trainers appreciate the wire hairs. Not all of them.
Absolutely.
Do. So I love that you do, because they're a challenge in their cells, but when you can work your way into their heart more than their head, you are 80% there.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Yep.
How is your husband on board with everything? I mean, are you just like, we're bringing all these dogs in now of our own, and now we're getting some client dogs? And is he kind of a good, savvy dog person too?
Fortunately, he grew up, farm kid. And his mother, my mother-in-law, she actually trained and raised herding dogs. She had border collies. And so he grew up around the whole dog scene. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that he loves it, but he's very savvy with the dog. He trained the yellow lab that we have was technically his dog. He trained him all himself. So he's very, very capable. He loves dogs. It's a lot of work, but he has his full-time gig. And, you know, this is mine, and he supports me having my passion and helps when he can. And it works out pretty good.
That's awesome. Do you breed as well?
I have yet to have a breeding.
Okay.
I personally the breeding part of it at this point in my life is something I would like to take a step into and learn more about it. Kind of get into that a little bit more. In the past, it just wasn't something that really appealed to me. And I just never really got into it. I like the more like performance part of it. I'm not the girl that's like, oh my gosh, I want to take all the puppies home. No, give me your dog when it's 6 months old, please. You can have it while it's learning how to not, you know, chew on every shoe and sock in the house.
right.
Yeah.
So what is kind of your typical training program then? So you'll get them in at 6 months old, and how long will you keep them at that point?
Yep. In a perfect world, I get them right around 6 months. Most dogs are mentally mature enough to handle training at that age. Some dogs take a little longer, but it all comes down to the client's goals and expectations. I get a lot of people that they just want to be able to basically shoot over their dog and have their dog understand that we're looking for birds. Mm-hmm. Those people, I typically have their dog for 30 days and they can kind of take it from there. There's a preserve right down the road from me where they release, pheasant, quail, chucker. And so a lot of times just being within close proximity to them, they will kind of get a membership out there and go kind of take their dog out there and go on themselves. And then if clients have, you know, bigger goals and expectations, then we just work out a program of, okay, let's do 60 days now and we're going to work on this or that. And then, you know, they may even go into hunt testing and stuff like that. So mm-hmm. I've had dogs that I've had for, you know, 6 months total. I get a lot of 60 to 90 day client dogs, but you know, quite a bit of just the 30 day dogs too.
Okay. So after their kind of like, let's say 30 day, training at 6 months old, when do you like to get them back again to start working on that advanced work?
So in a perfect world, again, I would, you know, get them around 6 months around, you know, late summer. And then I love when people can take their dog and get them on wild birds that first winter. Let them be puppies. Let them make mistakes. Let them bust birds. And then in the spring, ideally, that's when we would get them back and kind of iron out any of those little kinks that we found during the hunting season. I just think it's super important for those young dogs to get a good wild bird season under their belt. There's so much that those wild birds could teach them that I never will be able to.
Right.
But again, they learn some bad habits. So I do tend to get a lot of dogs back after that hunting season. And then depending on their age and again, their goal, we'll start doing the spring training and hunt testing. Usually, so I live in Southeast Nebraska and usually our first hunt tests are going to be like in April. So a lot, usually March is when it really starts to get busy for me. January and February are kind of really touch and go with weather. So March is kind of when things kick off again for us. And
Will you take them through your hunting season then? Do you take client dogs or do you back off on the number at that point?
I do. But most of the time it's like, it's if it's like a big fix, like somebody like, oh my gosh, my dog will not retrieve. And I will not hunt my dog unless it retrieves. So that's when I'll get that dog, you know, during a month of hunting season to hopefully get it fixed so they can enjoy a couple months with the dog retrieving. Or I'll do a lot of starting puppies because they hit that 6 months age and the owners figure, well, if I get them trained in October, I still have November, December, January where I can hunt with them. But really, hunt test season for us goes through like the month of October. So I'm pretty booked until November 1st. And then that's kind of when our guiding season really kicks off, especially over at the preserve.
Okay. So you're doing a lot of guiding too then.
Yeah, I do multiple times a week, sometimes multiple times a day, even. I'll have two strings of dogs where I'll just kind of rotate.
Mm-hmm. And it's not very typical that women are upland guides. Are you the only one there?
I am the only female there. And I've been there. So it's Beattie Outdoors is where I predominantly guide. I've guided other places too, but they keep me busy enough to where I really don't need to go anywhere else. And it's 20 minutes down the road. And I've been there now for, I think this is my fourth or fifth year guiding for them. So it works out. People love it. They love seeing the pointers and the flushers work together. And I get requested a lot just because I've known these people and built relationships with them for years now.
Right. I bet you do. And just seeing that dynamic of the pointers and the flusher together, especially as well trained as you have your dogs, I bet you're a busy girl.
I am. Yeah, but I love it. I love going up. My favorite thing is like doing the youth hunt. And I've done several, like women's only hunts and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there is nothing more rewarding than having my dogs point and retrieve a bird for a little kid. I mean, I can't even describe it. It's just the coolest thing. Those are my favorite types of hunts.
Yeah. Yeah. Their first bird it's pretty rewarding. You're right.
It is.
What do you feel is something that like sets you apart from other trainers?
Oh boy. I don't know. I guess the fact that I am a little bit smaller scale, just so I can do a lot more one-on-one with the dog and that I don't see everything as this is a 1-2-3 step program. Your dog's got to do 1-2-3. I want to do what's going to make you the happiest, your dog the happiest. And, you know, that might not be the same thing that I would do with my dog. I have a lot of people, they tell me, I don't care about waterfowl hunting. So I don't go and force their dog to retrieve a duck, you know? I just do what I like to do, what the owner has, what their end goal is, and just try to mold the dog into that as best as I can for them.
Sure. And I think even, you know, with that smaller amount of dogs that you're training, you have
a higher, faster turnover rate as well, because you're putting in so much more time with, yep, with that smaller number of dogs. Would you agree?
Yeah, I can get a lot more accomplished in 30 days than other trainers because I'm just genuinely spending more time with the dog.
And putting numerous Master Hunter titles on your dogs the way you do is no easy feat in itself because, you know, AKC hunt tests, there are so many different situations that arise, and to be able to continue going through those with young dogs that you are is pretty dang impressive.
Thank you. It's a little nerve-wracking. There's a lot, you know, you're dealing with other people. You've got judges, you've got your other gunners, you've got your other bracemate, you've got another dog, you've got live birds. And I mean, it's a miracle if everything goes right, and it never will. You know, you're going to fail tests just because you don't, your bracemate might screw up and your dog decides to join in with them. or the bird, of course, you know, is not going to fly away from your dog. It's going to fly right in their face, you know, things like yep. that. Or the gunner blows up the bird 10 yards in front of you on accident. It just have so many variables and things that can go wrong. It's a miracle when they do go right.
Right. What do you think most people are doing wrong? Like owners, you know, your average gun dog, bird dog owner, what is it you think that they're doing wrong that they could improve on and be getting more out of their dogs?
That's a really good question. And I think a lot of people, so they get a hunting dog, right? And they're high energy dogs. And so many people, it's becoming very popular right now, they send their dog to doggy daycare for hours at a time, sometimes all day, and they never personally interact with their dog. And I think that people, and not everybody, but a lot of people, they are not establishing that bond with their dog. And they're not teaching their dogs that, hey, you expend your energy by learning new things versus just running around a pen for 4 hours with, you know, 10 other dogs. And I think there's so much with a hunting dog that can be fixed or, you know, worked on by just having a good bond with your dog and having them understand that, hey, we learn things together. I don't know if that makes sense. Do I sound... Mm-hmm. completely nope. weird here.
No,
I don't know how to explain it, but I guess that's the biggest thing that I see right now that people are doing. It's just, they just turn the dog out, let it play, and they never teach it that one-on-one, you know, just like the foundation stuff.
Like being an intentional dog owner or intentional dog trainer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And teaching your dog to walk on a leash, simply that alone will expend more mental energy than the dog running around for 4 hours.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, when people have it in their head of I'm getting a puppy and I will be sending it out for training. So they don't do those critical things with puppies, just teaching them patience, teaching them to sit, you know, like you said, walking on a leash, because they think, well, my trainer will do all that for me. But if they just had those basics, they'd be in and out of training so much faster.
Many times that dogs come in for training and it takes me 10 days before I can even trust the dog being off of a leash. Right. So we're already 10 days behind. Whereas, you know, that could have been 10 days of being put on birds, but I can't put a dog on birds if I can't trust them off a leash.
Right. Exactly. And I've talked to a couple trainers, that are getting, you know, these, we call them the COVID puppies in training this spring, that, you know, last year they were never crated. They never had, you know, their owner leave, and these dogs are coming in for training and they are struggling really bad. They're, you know, the crate anxiety or the, you know, kennel anxiety, and some trainers have said, you know, if I can't get them to come around in a couple of days because they're just so dang stressed out, they're just sending them home. Are you noticing any of that?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that it's a trend that started even before COVID where people are afraid to crate their dogs or they think that it's mean, and to each their own. I have had a client before show up to drop their dog off with me. And once they discovered that their dog was going to be kept in the kennel, they decided to bring their dog. They didn't take their dog out. They told me they were going to take their dog elsewhere, but they couldn't find anybody that wasn't going to keep their dog in the kennel. So they ended up not getting their dog trained. You know, people have this idea in their head that, what are their expectations? Do they think that they just frolic around freely 24 hours a day with, you know, five other dogs plus my eight dogs? I don't understand.
Yes, I do think they think that. I do. I do think they think that.
I don't know. But there's so much that a dog can learn from just sitting there and thinking about what they just did out in the field and learning the patience and waiting their turn. I see it, unfortunately. I do.
Well, and they're going to see it too. I mean, when they go on that hunting trip, that's going to take 8 hours to get to, and they have to crate their dog on the way there. That's going to be the first time that dog might ever see a crate this fall. And that's going to have been a year to a year and a half of its life since it's been born that it has never seen a crate. So, I mean, I should say some people just let their dogs wander around their vehicles, but I would hope not, safety purposes.
Right. Yep.
It's crazy. It's crazy. But yeah, it's a trend right now because these dogs just cannot adapt to the lifestyle that they were brought into of never having that crate time. And, you know, that's their den. That's their calming area. So when they come in for training. Mm-hmm, right. When they're coming in for training, they're just completely out of their mind.
Yep. I see it.
Yeah. What's your best training advice then for a novice? Would it be that getting that bond with them, getting some foundations down? What do you think?
Yeah, of course. You know, all the foundational stuff, which recall and patience, those are the two things. If I had to just dwindle it down to two things, it's just being able to call your dog, have them come to you when you need them to. And, the other thing too, is the biggest thing is they just need to realize that everything just takes time. Everything, don't compare yourself to other people. And a lot of times people are watching these YouTube videos where there's tons of training advice and, they see, or they'll even compare themselves to me. And that's not fair because I train professionally and I do things with my dogs that you will never do. And people get discouraged and then they just give up and they're like, oh gosh, you know, my dog's just too hyper. Can't do that. Just everything takes time. You just got to be patient. Yes, work on foundational things like that. And crate training, of course, like we mentioned, is a wonderful tool to have. Just because patients in general, going back to that dog that I trained, just that was so high drive and just didn't have the mental capacity to understand patients. Everything that you teach your dog is going to be a building block for something else. Mm-hmm. So it's just, you got to build those foundational bricks.
Are you mainly using place board training when you're working on that kind of patience aspect?
Yep. And then I will transition that into other random objects, or even I'll put a crate in the middle of, you know, right in the middle of the room here where I'm training other dogs. They have to sit there and watch another dog do some retrieves. And they have to just sit there and be patient and calm and know that their turn is going to be coming soon.
What about outside? Do you use a chain gang that you have the dogs lined up watching you train the other dogs?
Yes. I've done that in the past, or I'll just, you know, do a stakeout, or once I get them to the point where they're place trained, I will just let them sit there on a place mat. I have a bunch of Corunda beds. I'll literally set one out there in the field and let them watch. The thing that I find with the, chain gangs and stakeouts is it depends on the dog. Sometimes if I got a dog that I really need to like amp up and pump up and I want him to just see everything and get super excited, that's the dog that I'll stake out there. If I've got a dog like Bella, like I mentioned, that was just a little bit, too high drive as it was, she would lose her mind if she was staked out there. So again, I kind of just adjust it to whatever the dog needs. And, you know, no two dogs are going to have basically the same regimen every day.
Right. Right. Nice. What is your bucket list hunt? Where would you like to do?
Oh, moose hunt in Alaska.
Really?
That would be it for me. Yep.
Nice. I'm surprised it wasn't a bird, but I like it. I like it.
Like I said, I was born in Sitka, Alaska. And so for me, that's just like the ultimate. I would love to go back and hunt moose up there. I mean, that would just be the coolest thing. I love big game too, you know? Mm-hmm. I love all of it.
What's your favorite game bird recipe?
Why, what do we do? We do so much. Our freezer is full. Something really simple is to make tacos or fajitas out of any type of bird meat. I mean, Canada geese, snow geese, put it in the crock pot for 8 hours with a stick of butter. So everything, you know, gets nice and moist in there. And add whatever. You can add that taco seasoning, add it to some fajitas with some peppers and onions. I think that's the easiest way to cook wild game, especially birds. Can't screw it up. And even if it's a little bit tough, just chop it up into smaller pieces.
Because you're such a avid waterfowl hunter, I'd like to know what you're doing to prepare ducks. Are you doing that recipe?
A lot of our waterfowl, we grind it up and make it into brats and sticks and jerky and stuff like that.
Nice.
We've got a buddy that's a hog farmer, so we'll get some hog fat from them and mix that in with it. And
okay,
got some pretty dang good recipes going on.
Dang, like that does sound good.
Stuff. Yeah,
right.
It's pretty good.
You do different flavors.
And then there's nothing better. Oh yeah, we'll do like a jalapeno ranch. We'll do like a barbecue. We'll do like a cheddar one. And like there is nothing better than to be sitting in the duck blind while shooting ducks while like eating a stick of duck jerky or a duck stick. I mean, it's cool.
That's awesome.
I don't know. It's just neat to be like actually eating what you're out there harvesting, you know. And I know a lot of people that don't. That meat just sits in the freezer. They don't do anything with it.
Right. And it's such a shame, but to be fair, I don't do a lot of waterfowl hunting because I simply can't come up with recipes that I feel confident that I would enjoy.
Yeah,
that's all.
That's the easiest way to do it is to lump it all together and make it into sticks and sausage.
Okay. I like it. I'm going to try that. We have a meat grinder and I think we have the ability to do some of that, with the casing
there you
and
go.
Stuff. So yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for giving me an idea. I bet it
is. It's a learning curve, but once you figure it out, I mean, you'll go through a couple recipes and then you'll finally find one that's like, oh my gosh, this is great. So write everything and now down as you're
right. I can just ask you to send me your recipes and I can see what you have.
I'd be happy to.
Awesome. And now I need to get myself a couple pigs as well because, some pork fat would be great.
You can buy it from, just go to Hy-Vee and ask them for some because they basically trim all their meat there and stuff too. So you can get it from them.
Well, we don't have Hy-Vees in Montana, but I'm sure I can find something.
Well, any grocery, local meat market.
Well, I love what you're doing. I think I'm sure enjoying following you on Instagram. And I think it's so cool how quickly you kind of transition to this full-time bird dog lifestyle and how well you're doing with so many different breeds. It's very cool.
And it's been a lot of hard work, but I genuinely just love it so much.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you got the secret right as far as the fact that each dog is different, but you know what it takes to get in tune with them and establish that bond. And that's huge because I think too many times we miss that, you know, owners in general, just having them there doesn't necessarily mean that they're completely bonded with you. So
yeah, exactly.
You got it down. Yeah. Well, how can we find you, connect with you, find out more about Backwater Hunting Dogs, book our dogs in for training with you? Tell us all about it.
Yeah. I mean, the easiest way is probably Instagram. It's just at Backwater Hunting Dogs. Otherwise, email is backwaterhuntingdogs@gmail.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Aaliyah, and good luck the rest of your training season, and hoping that goes into an awesome hunting season for you because it's just right around the corner.
I appreciate you having me. It's been a good time.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bird Dog Babe podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, share it and tag me and someone that would benefit from listening. And hey, help a girl out by giving the podcast a rating and review on whichever platform you're listening from. Send me a screenshot of your review and I'll mail you out a Bird Dog Babe sticker. Be sure to join me on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And if you're interested in some Bird Dog Babe swag or gear that I rely on, be sure to check out the store on thebirddogbabe.com. And most importantly, don't forget to support the sponsors of this podcast and the organizations that are working hard to conserve the birds you're chasing after and the public lands in which you hunt.